Produced by David Starner, Deirdre Menchaca, Ted Garvin and the online distributed proofreading team. Daniel Defoe of Captain Miss Sun. General Editors, Richard C. Boyce, University of Michigan. Ralph Cohen, University of California, Los Angeles. Vinton A. Deering, University of California, Los Angeles. Lawrence Clark Powell, Clark Memorial Library, Assistant Editor, W. Earl Britton, University of Michigan, Advisory Editors, Emmett 50. Avery, State College of Washington. Benjamin Boyce, Duke University. Louis Bretwald, University of Michigan. John Butt, University of Edinburgh. James 50. Clifford, Columbia University. Arthur Friedman, University of Chicago. Louis A. Landa, Princeton University. Samuel H. Monk, University of Minnesota. Ernest C. Mosner, University of Texas. James Sutherland, University College, London. H.T. Swedenborg Jr., University of California, Los Angeles. Corresponding Secretary, Edna C. Davis, Clark Memorial Library. Introduction. Defoe has been recognized as the author of A General History of the Robberies and Murders of the Most Notorious Pirates since 1932, when John Robert Moore suggested that the supposed author, Captain Charles Johnson, like Andrew Morton, Caracellum or Captain Roberts, was merely another mask for the creator of Robinson Crusoe. Although most of the first volume is of minor literary importance, the second section, which appeared in 1728 as the history of the pirates, commenced with a life of Captain Miss Sun and his crew, one of Defoe's most remarkable and neglected works of fiction. In much the same manner, and at the same time, that John Gay was satirizing Walpole's government in The Beggar's Opera, Defoe began to use his pirates as a commentary on the injustice and hypocrisy of contemporary English society. Among Defoe's gallery of pirates are Captain White, who refused to rob from women and children, Captain Bellamy, the proletarian revolutionist, and Captain North, whose sense of justice and honesty was a rebuke to the corruption of government under Walpole. But the fictional Captain Miss Sun, the founder of a communist utopia, is by far the most original of these creations. If we were to accept the view of 19th century critics that Defoe was one of the earliest exponents of laissez-faire, his creation of a communist utopia would seem remarkable indeed. But paradoxes fascinated Defoe, and his ideas can seldom be reduced to unambiguous platitudes. He was especially fascinated by the comparison between businessmen and thieves. In 1707 he urged the government to pardon the Madagascar pirates if they agreed to stop their crimes, pay a large sum of money, and become honest freeholders, as others of our West India pirates, merchants I should have said, have done before them. And he noted that it would make a sad chasm on the exchange of London if all the pirates should be taken away from the merchants there. 12 years later, just before the start of the South Sea Bubble, Defoe attacked stock jobbing as a branch of highway robbing. 2. Although these attacks were directed mainly at trade thieves and corruptions in business practices, they reflect Defoe's growing concern with problems of poverty and wealth in England. In his preface to the first volume of The General History of the Pirates, Defoe argued that the unemployed seamen had no choice but to steal or starve when the pirate, Captain Bellamy, boards a merchant ship from Boston. He attacks the inequality of capitalist society, the ship owners, and most of all, the captain. Damn me, you are a sneaking puppy, and so are all those who will submit to be governed by laws which rich men have made for their own security, for the cowardly whelps have not the courage otherwise to defend what they get by their knavery, but damn me altogether. Damn them for a pack of crafty rascals, and you, who serve them, for a parcel of hen-hearted numbskulls. They vilify us, the scoundrels do, when there is only this difference. They rob the poor under the cover of law, forsooth, and we plunder the rich under the protection of our own courage. 3. Bellamy asks the crew of the captured ship to abandon the slavery of working for low wages under severe captains for the complete economic and political equality of life on a pirate ship. Government on Captain Miss Sun's ship, the Victor, and in the colony of Libertalia is partially an idealization of the pirate's creed. But two other elements which must be considered are, first, the concept of government in the state of nature, and secondly, the ideal of the socialist utopia. Most political theorists of Defoe's time postulated a state of nature in which man lived either entirely free from government, or under loose patriarchal control, from which he was removed either by the invention of money, the discovery of agriculture, or by some crime. To a certain extent, Miss Sun's pirate government may be regarded as a stage in the evolution of government. In the farther adventures of Robinson Crusoe, Defoe showed how government evolved from the anarchy of the state of nature. Both Crusoe's colony and Libertalia are eventually forced to establish government, private property and criminal laws, but Libertalia, which retains its egalitarian and democratic character, is overthrown by its failure to account for human evil and crime. A second influence on Captain Miss Sun's ideology is Plutarch's description of the laws of Sparta and Rome. Even during the anti-communist period which followed the Glorious Revolution, the well-regulated state of the Lacedaemonians remained the norm for utopias. The influence of Plutarch pervades the biographies in the general history of the pirates. Lycurgus's laws echo throughout Miss Sun's attacks on luxury and the unequal distribution of wealth, while Plutarch's study of Spartacus, which is mentioned in Defoe's preface, may well have been the model for his hero. But neither the desire to regain the purity of the state of nature, nor an admiration for Spartan simplicity entirely explain Miss Sun's vigorous demand for freedom, and his attacks on the corruption of the ruling class. By refusing to fly the pirate flag, Miss Sun dramatizes the growing revolt of the poor against a useless nobility. The crew of the Victor are, prophetically enough, French. Their aspiration is for a society following the precepts of La Carrière Auverdoc's talents. Their revolt is that of a few courageous men unafraid to engage in the pirate's war against mankind, while those of lesser courage dance to the music of their chains. Defoe's study of Miss Sun is different from the utopias of Moore, Bacon or Campanella insofar as there is no discovery of an ideal civilization. Libertalia is a utopia which reflects a direct reaction to the abuses of the time, abuses of economic, political and religious freedom. Anticipating Beccaria's criticism of the death penalty by almost 40 years, Caraccioli argues that since man's right to life is inalienable, no government can have the power of capital punishment. 4. Miss Sun's belief in equality is extended to include the Negro slaves the Victor takes at sea as well as the natives of Madagascar. After asking the Negroes to join his crew, Miss Sun tells his men that the trading for those of our own species could never be agreeable to the eyes of divine justice. That no man had power of the liberty of another, and while those who professed a more enlightened knowledge of the deity sold men like beasts, they proved that their religion was no more than grimace. For his party hopped, he spoke the sentiments of all his brave companions, he had not exempted his neck from the galling yoke of slavery, and asserted his own liberty to enslave others. Slavery is banished from Miss Sun's ship, and the Negroes are schooled in the principles of freedom. Perhaps the most difficult problem in discussing the principles of Miss Sun and Caraccioli is to attempt an explanation of why Defoe, a Presbyterian, should have made his protagonists into deists. Defoe attacks Caraccioli's deistic arguments through his narrator, Captain Johnson, who remarks that such ideas are pernicious only to weak men who cannot discover their fallacy. But since similar ideas appear in Robert Drury's journal published a year later, it may be assumed that the arguments of the deists held a certain fascination for Defoe at this time. Caraccioli's deism also has a dramatic function in the story. that on a voyage to Rome a young man like Miss Sun should be converted to deism by a disillusioned, lewd priest, was in harmony with the traditional English belief in the dangers of Italy. 5. That Caraccioli should combine the rebellion against organized religion with the revolt against monarchy, is indicative of Defoe's keen apprehension of the future course of history. Considered as a short novel, the history of Captain Miss Sun and his crew reveals many of the same techniques which Defoe used in his longer works. To gain a sense of verisimilitude, the narrator pretends to be working from a manuscript, a device which Defoe also employed in his memoirs of a cavalier. As in Colonel Jack, real historical figures and events from the War of the Spanish Succession are woven into the adventures of the victor. Captain Miss Sun and his crew sink the Winchelsea, an English ship lost in the West Indies at the end of August, 1707, and they barely escape from Admiral Wager's fleet, which fought a famous battle there in 1708. Even the name of Miss Sun's ship, the Victor, was undoubtedly familiar to Defoe as the vessel commanded by the famous French corsair, Colonel Sauce. 6. So convincing is Defoe, that although his hero is shown meeting a real freebooter, Captain 2, 10 years after 2's death, Miss Sun is still included in the histories of piracy. 7. Also typical of Defoe's fiction is the relationship between Captain Miss Sun, the leader, and his intellectual mentor, Caraccioli. Colonel Jack and his tutor, Moll Flanders and her governess, and particularly Captain Singleton and William Walters, form similar groups. Just as William Walters, a Quaker, reminds Captain Singleton and the crew that their business is not fighting but making money, so Caraccioli addresses lengthy speeches to the crew, converting everyone on the Victor to democracy and deism. Miss Sun's Libertalia takes root in Madagascar, where Singleton wanted to establish a colony, while both Caraccioli and Walters adapt the secular aspects of their religion to piracy. But whereas Walters eventually converts Singleton into an honest Christian, Caraccioli leads Miss Sun into piracy. In the history of Captain Miss Sun and his crew, Defoe decided to pursue the same method of third-person narrative as in his brief biographies of real pirates. The result is that he merely provides a sketch of political theories, rather than a study of human beings. Of course, there are good reasons for this. Defoe was more interested in dramatizing proletarian utopian ideals than in developing the inner workings of Miss Sun's mind. The novelette is unified by its epic theme, not by its study of character or its episodic plot. Although Defoe toyed with radical notions throughout the history of the pirates, he had little faith in their practicality. Libertalia must be understood as Defoe's best expression of political and social ideals which he admired but considered unworkable. The continuation of Miss Sun's career in the section of Captain 2 depicts the decline and fall of the Utopia, and the hero's tragic death as a disillusioned idealist. This, however, is another story, a story which suggested that private property was necessary, equality impossible, and slavery a useful expedient for colonization. It was a far more comforting message for the Augustan age, but it could not silence the toxins of the French Revolution which sound throughout the speeches of Miss Sun and Caraccioli. Maximilian E. Novak, University of Michigan. Bibliographical note: the text of Captain Miss Sun and his crew has been reproduced from the Henry E. Huntington Library's first edition copy of the second volume of A General History of the Robberies and Murders of the Most Notorious Pirates, which appeared under the title The History of the Pirates. Notes to the introduction. Footnote 1. Daniel Defoe, A Review of the Affairs of France, ed. A. W. Seckard, New York, 1938, IV, 424a, footnote 2. The Anatomy of Exchange Alley, London, 1719, page 8. Footnote 3. A General History of the Robberies and Murders of the Most Notorious Pirates, London, 1728, 2, 220. Footnote 4. C. Cesar Beccaria, An Essay on Crimes and Punishments, Stanford, 1953, pages 97-99. Footnote 5. In the previous year, Defoe had written that it was the most dangerous thing in the world for a young gentleman, sober and virtuous, to venture into Italy, till he was thoroughly grounded in principle, .4, that nothing was more ordinary than for such either to be sedicated by the subtlety of the clergy, to embrace a false religion, or by the artifice of a worse enemy, to give up all religion, and sink into skepticism and deism, or, perhaps, atheism. A New Family Instructor, London, 1727, page 17. Footnote 6. See Ruth Bourne, Queen Anne's Navy in the West Indies, New Haven, 1939. Pages 63-169-172, and Manuscripts of the House of Lords, New Series, London, 1921, via 117-119. Footnote 7. See Philip Goss, The History of Piracy, New York, 1934, p. 194, and Patrick Pringle, Jolly Roger, London, 1953, pages 136-138. Om tulit punctum, qui miscuit utile dulci. Or, The History of the Pirates. Vol. 2. Of Captain Miss Sun. We can be somewhat particular in the life of this gentleman, because, by very great accident, we have got into our hands a French manuscript, in which he himself gives a detail of his actions. He was born in Provence, of an ancient family. His father, whose true name he conceals, was master of a plentiful fortune, but having a great number of children, our rover had but little hopes of other fortune than what he could carve out for himself with his sword. His parents took care to give him an education equal to his birth. After he had passed his humanity and logic, and was a tolerable mathematician, at the age of 15 he was sent to Angers, where he was a year learning his exercises. His father, at his return home, would have put him into the musketeers, but as he was of a roving temper, and much affected with the accounts he had read in books of travels, he chose the sea as a life which abounds with more variety, and would afford him an opportunity to gratify his curiosity. By the change of countries, having made this choice, his father, with letters of recommendation, and everything fitting for him, sent him volunteer on board the Victor, commanded by Monsieur Furbin, his relation. He was received on board with all possible regard by the captain, whose ship was at Marseille, and was Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.